Let's go ahead and get started because I know I'm the only thing standing between you and movie world. So we'll try to get on with this as quick as we can. So I'd like to thank everyone for taking the time out of their hectic tech ed schedule to attend my session. So hopefully you'll get some good information on the BizTalk services. So a little bit for those people that don't know who I am, a little bit of my background. I was looking at it earlier this year and realized that I'd been in the IT industry now 30 years. I started hanging tapes in a tape library in a mainframe computer room in, what was it, June of 83. So a long, long time ago. And the funny thing was I actually started university as a photojournalism major and switched halfway through. So spent 10 years working on IBM mainframes. Back in the early 90s, decided that the mainframes weren't probably a good place to be for the future, so made the big switch. Had a copy of Windows 2.0. How many people saw Windows 2.0? You're too old, too. and did most of my first integration work on the C++ 2.0 with SQL 6 was the first go. So the first SQL version you saw was 7, you didn't live. 6 and 6.5 were much more fun. Yeah, a lot of very much like Sybase. So, and I moved from Kentucky to Australia twice, once for work and once permanently. So, what are three famous things from Kentucky?
Chicken.
Good, chicken. What else? Jack Daniels is actually not from Kentucky. That's Tennessee.
They have the Derby.
They have the Derby, the horses, yep. And there's a lot of other bourbon places in Kentucky. So there's Jim Beam and Maker's Mark and a few of those. So it is the famous. And then the one most famous person probably is Muhammad Ali, was from Kentucky. So basically what we're going to do today is we're going to spend some time looking deeply into BizTalk services. And that's the preview inside of Windows Azure was announced at US Tech Ed. How many people have done anything at all with the BizTalk services in Azure? A couple of people, that's good. How many people have used the on-premises version of BizTalk? Good crowd of those, so that's good, because we're going to actually look at how the different features in BizTalk services compare to what you have currently in BizTalk. So we're going to look at just a little bit of a review because this is a deep dive session. So we're not going to try to take a really high-level overview. We're going to dig into some of the features. And mostly what we're going to look at is around how to extend it. So where can I put code? How can I extend the features of BizTalk services? And this was an interesting decision they made when they were building BizTalk services, is if you're familiar with SQL, SQL runs in a shared instance in Azure, and you can't really put like CLR types in your SQL because they're scared of what's going to happen when they let people put .NET code into a shared instance. So at first when they were looking at it and they were introducing the concept to the MVPs, a few years ago, they were asking, so if we put it into a shared instance, we're not going to let you be able to write any custom code in the pipelines or anything like that. And everybody said, well, don't bother if we're not, because most everything we do, we've got some sort of custom code, either in a map or a pipeline or something like that. So they did make that decision that it is a dedicated instance when you configure it that's yours. So whatever you do in code can only affect you. So they've allowed you to do as bad as you want to yourself. So then we'll also look a little bit about the high availability and scale out options that you have for BizTalk services. So what I first wanted to look at was all of the components that make up BizTalk services. It's different from a lot of the other things you see in Azure. So if you go configure a SQL database, you configure a SQL database. If you go configure a virtual machine, you're configuring a single virtual machine. Where BizTalk Services, there's a lot more behind it. We have the ways that we get to it. We've got the portal, we got Visual Studio, and we've got PowerShell. So pretty much everything they've built for Windows Azure has to have the PowerShell support for people to automate some of that. We also have a storage account that it uses for monitoring, and it has a tracking store SQL database in Azure. So you need to configure those before you configure your BizTalk service in Azure. Then we have our low-level artifacts that we're going to build, which is, at least configure the certificates, our assemblies. So we will create, and we're going to look at how we create those. Our schemas. The schemas are exactly the same schemas that we're using in BizTalk's on-premise today. So it's an XSD schema. The transforms, if you've had a look at the BizTalk services, you'll know that the transform, there is a new mapper. It has a lot more specific control over how you loop. And we're going to look at how we put code or XSLT into the transformations. Then the next step up is, I guess, the best analogy to what this is in BizTalk on-premise is it's a receive port, a pipeline, and a send port. So that's our bridges. And we have four flavors at the moment. We have a one-way XML. We have a request response XML. We have a pass-through. And we have the EDI one. At the moment, they only have X12. And if you're familiar with the EDI standards, X12 is the American National Standard, which does really good in America, but not much outside of it. And then there's the EDIFACT standard. They promised me that as soon as it goes GA, very shortly after that, the EDIFACT will be there. So, and I imagine there will be a matching set of bridges to go along with the EDIFACT messages. Then for handling the EDI side of things, we've got a whole layer around our partner management. So we've got the partners, the agreements, the profiles, the partnerships that we can do for managing the EDI. We're really not going to spend any time today on any of the EDI stuff. So if we look at a typical bridge, this is a one-way bridge in BizTalk services, we've got our sources. Now, what's wrong with those three sources? Is that all everybody's going to need? Nah, they're a little bit limiting at the moment. You always get a HTTP endpoint, and then you can have multiple FTP, FTPS, or SFTP. Everybody, when we looked at it earlier on in some of the previews that they gave to the BizTalk MVPs, we went, where's Service Bus? We must have asked that a lot, but at the moment, that's what it looks to me like the first release of this is targeting specifically to EDI customers in the U.S., because that's the two big transports that they require, the FTP. And these are also client FTP and SFTP. They're not running an FTP server for you. You're reaching out and bringing the file to the bridge. Now, on the way out, we've got a lot better picture. So we've got Service Bus, which includes the queues, the topics, and the relay. We've got HTTP. We've got blob storage, so we could be just taking and dropping messages into a blob storage for something else to pick up. FTPS, SFTP, and we have the web services. So that's basically our WCF layer. So we could do the different WCF bindings at that point. Now, the main part of our pipeline, it differs a bit from what we see in the BizTalk on-premises from the point that we have a validation, we have an enrichment, a transformation, and then another enrichment. So if you think about the on-premises, we have a decode, we have a disassembler, we have a validate, and then we have a party management. So what we have here is that we can validate the document that came in, we can then enrich that document, we can then pass it into a transformation, and then we can enrich the output of that transformation. So we're going to look a lot more at this as we get in. So what we're going to do is just have a quick overview of the bridge, look at a few of the things that are in the bridges, just to set up the piece we want to do about extending. So let me swap over on machines. And what we have here, let me just bring up the piece here, and the resolution's a bit low, but it's easier to read this way. So one of the things is that we have the possibility having a two-way XML bridge. So let me just see. I don't think I can zoom out on that, but what we have, I'll stretch that out a little bit. So what we have here is on our XML request reply bridge, we have the message types that we expect to receive in. And this is a list, so we can go in here and we can add messages to our request types and then our reply types. Then we do a validate. And one of the things that's interesting in the validate, unlike the on-premises version of BizTalk, the validate doesn't give us a choice of what to validate against. It basically validates the request messages that we've specified. And that's the only messages that'll pass the validation are the what we've actually specified. So if you try to send something else, it's not like BizTalk where the validator will find the stuff that's deployed in the BizTalk databases. Then we have the enrich. And the enrichment, there is built-in enrichment that we can do. And that's mostly around properties from SOAP, HTTP headers. There is a lookup. There's XPath expression, so I can go pick a field out of my document and promote that property to use. I have bits out of the FTP, so if you're familiar with BizTalk on-premise, you know that you've got the properties that are related to FTP, and that's the same thing we have here. Then we have system. System is actually one of those that we might want to pull some fields out of because we've got things like the request ID, and that's the GUID of the message, and that actually matches against all the tracking that's created in BizTalk services. So that's how you can tie a lot of that stuff together if you need to. Message receive time, source name, source type of our message. Now, this is mostly covered in more of an intro, so I'm going to leave that for the moment. What I do want to show you, if you look at the enrich phase here and over here in the bottom right-hand corner, you'll see that on enter and on exit, we're going to put some code in there. And that's where we do that. And if we go back, we can notice also that validate has an on enter and an on exit. Our transform has an on enter and an on exit. And then if we go on down to the enrich that's past the transform, that also has an on enter and an on exit. So we've got a lot more places that we can actually put custom code in here than typically in our pipeline. Pipeline, we write a component, we typically put it in the decode phase. We might put some stuff in the validate. We might put some, if you look at the ESB toolkit, it puts stuff in the party resolver phase. So that's the typical things that we would look at in a request response. So we've got our message type in, message type out. And pretty much when you're using the request response bridge, you're going to be using a WCF or an HTTP where you're going to go down through a service bus relay on premise. It'll do some processing, send the response back, and you'll send the response back out. So that's more of a tightly coupled. If we look at the a one-way, let me just pop up another, or actually, let me just pop up this one. And if we go in here, I just resized the screen wrong. But we can go look at our bridge in here for one way. And what we'll see is that we do have a little bit extra in a one-way bridge. We've actually got a decode phase. So it does support the same flat file schemas that we're used to for the on-premise version. So we can go in there, we specify one of the request message types, and then it'll do the decode. Again, there's nothing we specify. It just is based on that schema type. And then we have our validators. And also the decode phase has an on-enter and on-exit piece of that. So that's pretty much, and then we would put that bridge configuration in there, so we'd have our bridge and then our one-way destination. You'll notice we don't have any enter type definition defined for this because it has by default an HTTP endpoint. If I wanted to put FTP in there, I could go over there and put a source that's FTP and drag that onto the surface and then connect that to the bridge. And I can have multiple of those endpoints. I want to hop back to the slides now, and we're going to get more into... that's not what I wanted to do. I need to switch machines. So what we want to do now is we're going to look at user code in our bridges. So where we want to put code in our bridges and what we can put in and what we can do. So we've got technically three points that we put user code in. The one that's pointing to the enrich, but we can actually put on enter, on exit on each one of those phases. We can also put custom code in our transformations. So how many people enjoy writing XSLT maps? Enjoy writing XSLT maps? I will do almost anything to keep from writing XSLT maps. But we've got that option. And then we also have, with WCF, our normal WCF behaviors. So, and I've had to write a few of those in the BizTalk stuff to send credentials to different systems and things like that. So we've got that. I'm not going to cover that because that really doesn't change in BizTalk services compared to any .NET WCF behavior or a BizTalk WCF behavior. What I want to concentrate on is our message interceptors that are going to be in the on-enter and on-exit of our bridge, and also the transformation. Yes?
Configuring WCF custom behaviors is a pain in the bum.
Yes.
This is a portal. How do you deploy them and configure them?
You basically put them in the configuration file for the BizTalk services project. So if you do that in a normal BizTalk, you'd go in and do the machine config, put them in there. In this case, you actually put them in the app config for the BizTalk services application when you deploy it.
Is there a local debugging experience?
No.
How do you debug the industry?
With great difficulty. So,
probably test it in
what you would do is you would test it locally first, because you can use .NET to test that behavior. And then you would push it up into the BizTalk services.
Correct. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so you have a test harness that you put in there and test it that way.
But you're not testing the message that's come out of the pipeline with the enrich process.
No, but there's no reason that you can't push that same message to... Because the... most of the enrichment process that's happening is for the routing that's in the bridge, not for that destination. So
you use the intercept to get the copy of the message and test it.
Yeah. So let's go and talk a little bit about the message interceptor. So basically, it executes between the different stages, whichever stage you put in, either in on-enter or on-exit, you can put your interceptor in. It has full access to the stream, the promoted properties, all of that kind of information. So it's just like in a normal on-premise pipeline component. You can pretty much do anything you want to this, the message as it's flowing through. And then basically there are trace, you can put trace statements in there that will show up in that database that you've configured along with the same traces that you get for like the pipeline starting and ending that you get normally in a BizTalk. So let's go have a look at some message inspectors. Now the one bit of code, and I just realized what I did, there we go. The one bit of code we're going to look at for message inspectors is around converting a Excel document to XML. How many people have tried that? So what this is using, it's actually taking advantage of the ability to define a schema inside of an Excel document and map the fields there. So it's using some of the Open XML libraries there. Most of the code's been hidden behind here, so I just really am trying to show you here what the process is in the message inspector. So our message inspector needs to inherit from iMessage inspector. It only has one operation, which is an execute. You get the message coming in and you get the context. So then you can look at that. So in this particular one, we're actually making sure that, let's see if I get, so we're making sure that the content type is an Excel, Open XML format office document. And then what we're doing, we're calling off to a converter that will actually return the XML from that spreadsheet. And then we basically set the data position. We set the new content type. At the moment, this is a limitation in preview that each bridge has the content type set. And you can't change it inside of the bridge. They are working on that, but, and I'll show you how they've accomplished it in this particular one. And then we basically write out a trace event. So for your debugging experience, there is going to be a lot of the stuff that you use in that trace events. Again, because it's running in the BizTalk services in the cloud, you're going to be spending a bit of time looking at the trace events that are created. So if we look at the actual bridge configuration for this, let me just go one other. What we have is we have two bridges chained together and then two destinations. So that's one thing that I think their idea of not having a service bus as an input, they took the approach that they can chain multiple bridges together. And what they've done in this example is they go in here, and this first one is a pass-through bridge. So you see it's got a enrich phase. And if we look at the properties of that enrich, we'll see that in here we've specified the method that we want to run. Now, in terms of being user-friendly, it's not quite there. That's what you need to specify in that line. And there's no browse. There is a little utility that's out on the CodePlex library that you can run against your DLL, and it will spit that out so that you can grab it. But it's Dan's done things like this in the pipeline also. It's the fully qualified name, public key token, the works. And at the moment, that's the way they're doing it. They haven't got the UI to where you can browse off to a DLL and it will bring back that information. Yes?
Is that going to be is all that shiny stuff going to be in once it gets pushed out? This is in the future?
Well, the interesting thing and the big difference between BizTalk services and BizTalk on-premise is going to be the release cadence. So if you look at all the Azure stuff, some of the Azure stuff now is down to 1 month release cadence. Okay, so what they're doing is they're going to leave it like this with a few modifications until it goes GA, and No, I don't know the date on that yet. But then, because it's on a three-month release, it's going to be less than three-month release cadence, these things are going to be fixed as they do that cadence. And that's the one advantage that we have for all of us that have endured BizTalk for years, that it's like two, maybe three-year release cadence here, and there you don't get a lot of things in the middle. Like the EDIFACT, they've promised me as soon as it goes GA in that first or second release cadence that EDIFACT stuff's going to be there. So there, and it's not going to be just little patches like we're seeing with the updates. They're going to be reasonable changes. So we've got that in there in our bridge. We've got the ability to go in there and put a on enter, on exit. At the moment, like I said, we change the content type of that message from Excel to XML. And then we go in and we push that into our bridge configuration, where we're passing that XML document now to a normal XML one-way bridge. So, and if we needed to put it out as an Excel document, we could reverse it. XML coming in, tied to a pass-through, byte stream going out. So that's pretty much the message interceptor. Let's go, or message inspector, sorry. So basically, there's a lot of code behind that, but again, you can do anything. This could also be a place where I'm just promoting properties. So like if I've got a XML document that's got a bunch of repeating nodes, but I want to pick a value out of like the first repeating node, I can't do that through my XPath expression as easy. So I could do it in code here, do the promote, be able to use that.
You could create a facsimile in the ESB toolkit. With the enriched, you could create a reason slip and have external services that are called by this message inspector.
Yep. It'll be a little bit harder because of the way the routing works, because you don't really have dynamic routing in outside of the bridges. So what we have in this particular case, if we look at the bridge here, we've got two endpoints, but they have conditions. And then if we look here, we can look at the route conditions are in a table, and it matches the first one.
You do have service bus queues as...
That's true. So the only problem is, and this is why we complained about not having service bus queue as an inbound. It's going to be a lot harder to get it back into another bridge without the service bus.
You have to presume some level of, like with BizTalk, the line of business adapter SDK, where you can write your own extensibility inbound and outbound. You hope that at least they give you...
Yeah, so the other thing is you don't have the SendPort group feature that you have in on-premises BizTalk. It can only go to a single destination. So the first one of those things that matches is what gets the message.
That seems a little strange. Publish, subscribe, isn't that a little bit of a step backwards?
It is. But I think it's related to the way they've designed it. And again, I think when push came to shove, they needed something out the door. It is related to that, but I mean, from the point of view, if they had it multiple match, they would send them from inside of this. Because I think, I haven't had it confirmed, but I think under the covers, it's actually workflow running this. So there's some stuff in there that's gonna determine what actually happens. But again, I've got a slide a little later on of what they are looking at for future. So, but this is what's there now. And again, there's a lot of filter conditions out in the all of the samples that are 1 = 1. So that it just goes out that path. So let's hop back to the slides. Any other questions at the moment while I'm doing this? So message inspectors, little bit from that. It needs to, and basically it's a drive class from iMessage Inspector. You can put the DLL, you can upload it through the portal separately, or you can add a reference to your project, and it will get uploaded when your project gets deployed. Again, that fully qualified name, I mean, from my point of view, that wouldn't have taken a lot of work to give me a browse function and point to a DLL and get the fully qualified name. But again, it's what they have at the moment. They'll be enhancing some of those things. And then you can do properties. I didn't show you, but when you set the message inspector, you can have properties for your code. If you expose public properties in there, you can say property 1 equals X, property Y, whatever. So you can make generic message inspectors. So if you want to promote, say, a file name or something like that that you want to use downstream, you can do that in there and have properties inside of that message inspector definition. The one thing about it that is still a little bit harder to deal with than the normal BizTalk is that if you make changes to your source or your destination information and things like that, you need to redeploy the whole thing. There's no way to get to that configuration information through the portal at the moment. I still don't think you can update it. You just have to do the deploy through PowerShell. It's still a deploy. So. It does have retry, and it is durable to a point. I think it gets put into one of the message store databases for you to manage from there.
So there is a possibility to resume?
I think you just have to download it and reprocess it. I don't think that it's quite the rich features of that resume that we have currently. So... the other thing, it does need to be strong named. They couldn't get away from that. That's just BizTalk, guys. you have the traces are the Windows Azure diagnostic log that's in your storage. So that's where you get to the traces. And again, a preview limitation is that I can't change that message type with an inspector. So if I change it, I need that pass through, then I'm going to push it through to the next bridge. So, that also is probably related just to the way that the bridge is working at the moment. So now we're going to move on and talk a little bit about our XML transformations. There's some really neat stuff in here for those of us like myself who hate writing XSLT. So we have two places that we can put code. We can do XSLT, we can supply the full XSLT, or we can write a C# scripting functoid. Now, the bad news about the C# scripting functoid is it's all in this really hokey little dialogue. It's not calling off to an external assembly. I'm hoping that's going to be one of the first iterations because it's not fun. So, let's go have a bit of a look at that. So, okay, so if I go here and we'll bring up one of the transformation samples, what we'll look at first is the custom XSLT. So as you would have expected with a BizTalk map, when you have custom XSLT, you have no lines. You have a source and destination, and then basically you have a XSLT source specified down here. And again, not the most user-friendly place to store that. So, well, yes. There is an import and an export, or an import for both the extended and the... So most likely what you're going to do is you'll do some development and create the XSLT and then put it in here. So, but again, this is preview on version one. So it is still, and I'm not sure how many people here started with BizTalk 2000. This is still well and truly in it above that. So we haven't gone all the way back. So again, we can do our XSLT here. So if I'm really set on doing XSLT maps, I can do that. What I'm looking at is that I want to look at my C-sharp functoids. And if I can get that to, come into play here. This is a little bit, I'm not going to go into the maps because that's more of an intro. I just want to show the C-sharp scripting functoid. And basically we have our inputs and we have a scripting text block. Now, I decided it would be much easier to look at it like that than in that little window. So, but the interesting thing about this is, look what the input type and the output types are for this function. What implications does that have for us? I can get the whole XML document into this function call. So how many people have reverted to XSLT because you need stuff from all over the document and the existing mapper won't do that for us? And also notice the output is an ienumerable. It will create multiple nodes on the way out. So I think this has got some of the really, really interesting implications. The fact that I can use the X element to basically look at my input, find all the different pieces I need in the input, then go through and create my output. So I can put as, the only thing that I'm disappointed about is that I'm doing it in that little dodgy little window. But it's not going to be hard for me to build a test framework in unit testing around that so that I can test that before I put the code in there. So I can go through there. I got a for each in there, going through there, and then I'm outputting those nodes as enumerable. So, yes?
What version of .NET code is supported in this?
In which version of BizTalk Server?
In BizTalk Server, you can't use generics in your scripting code.
Oh, but if you put it in a .NET?
Yes.
Yeah, so, I don't write scripting code. I always put it in an external assembly, so I'm not sure. This is 4.5, I think. Yeah, so I'm almost positive this is 4.5, so I've got access to all of that. And it looks like they're giving me some using statements. Because you notice I'm not fully qualifying X element and things like that. So basically, I would put that in there. I would have that into my transformation. You can see where I scrolled around and see that. So you don't get the world's best formatting experience in that little window. But again, I'm hoping one of that first cut is, okay, here's an external assembly, call it. So I've got support for that, things like that. So let's hop back to, so those are really the only two places that we can put custom code in that scripting functoid and into the custom XSLT. So we can bring in any primitive type, so we can still do the same thing we're doing in BizTalk on-premise. So take in a string, put out a string, take in five strings, put out one string, things like that. Or I can do X element in, and then also the ienumerable X element out. So I can create just a single node on the way out, or I can create a whole list of nodes. So one of the things that I've actually thought about for this is extended validation on XML. Now that I can take in X element, and then I can put out all of the errors in an enumerable node. So this may be one of the early uses of the BizTalk services is to do data cleansing before it actually sends down to our on-premise servers. Especially if you're dealing with customers that data is notoriously bad, you can do that extended validation. Let's see. Again, that's pretty much that elements will be inserted into our output message. So just to recap kind of in our bridge structure, where we're going to be able to put custom code, we've got it in our enter and exit of our validation, enrichment, transformation, and enrichment. So I'd be interested when people start playing with this a bit more, how many message inspectors they end up in there. So because you've got a lot of places to put message inspectors in that, because you've got 8 different places in that pipeline to put a message inspector. So, and also interested for feedback on what type of message inspectors you're building, because I think that's good to feed back to the product group, because that dialogue for your enrichment, if you can pick out specific use cases, we can get that added to those dialogues so that you can do that without writing your own code. Because right now it's just a start. They do have a lookup in there, and it is pretty much just about as lame as the one that you have in the existing database lookup when you're searching for a column in a table and it gives you another column in the table. So you don't have any kind of full query pieces in there. So, but there are our ability to put code into our bridge. Yes?
Do you control the WCF service as the destination?
Yes.
So how do you bind the operations, the SOAP operations?
So basically, that's one of the things that you can, in that last enrichment, so if we just switch back here real quick, and we look at one of those, let me go to my order processing. So basically, in that bridge, in the enrichment after the transform, some of the things I can add there is like my SOAP, and I can add a SOAP action in there that allows me to control how it's going to go through.
So as long as the document conforms to the schema that the service is expecting and the SOAP action matches, you should just invoke any service that's exposed.
Yes.
Well,
all of your configuration is in the configuration files here. So you can do your binding extensions are all there and things like that. So, and you've got your transport, your client endpoint behaviors and all of that kind of stuff, just like you would in normal .NET code. Little bit more flexible than what we've got with BizTalk on premise, where you have to go through their tool or you have to do some custom binding work. So you can specify all that there. I haven't dug that deep into it, but I'm assuming that there's a fair bit of stuff that you can put in there, just like you can in normal .NET code.
So Bill, because you have all that control in that config, you don't have a need for a custom WCF binding in BizTalk services, do you?
Typically not, because it's all specified in there. So. And that's where you'd put your behavior. And see, you would basically, your binding extensions up there, that's where you'd put those behavior extensions and stuff all coded locally instead of in the machine config, because you don't have access to the machine config. It all has to be local in here. Yeah. And I haven't tried it. I wonder. Everybody see what I highlighted just then? You can use the WCF configuration editor in there. So if you don't like coding WCF configuration by hand, which I feel sorry for you if you do, but those are kind of things that you can take advantage of. Again, because it's in Visual Studio and they're taking advantage of all those tools, and it understands it as a WCF configuration file. we doing on time? Not too bad. So that's basically a recap of where we can put the code. Now, here are what they're looking at for some of the future enhancements. So additional sources and also custom sources. So be able to do some of the stuff there. Also with destinations. Probably the custom destinations will be first before the custom sources, but enhancing that list of sources is, I think, going to be an important thing around being able to look at service bus queues and topics and all of that kind of stuff. What's that? Yeah, I'm assuming that's going to be the same way. I mean, because it's really just WCF bindings. When you deploy your DLLs into the portal, they get into the GAC of your BizTalk service, so you should be able to reference them. That's why I don't understand why they don't have custom assemblies available through that scripting functoid. You're already putting that code into a central location in your BizTalk services. So, also pipeline templates, because right now, if you notice, they've got the pass-through, the one-way, the two-way, the X12 one. So eventually you should be able to create your own pipeline component there. The big question has been about where orchestration lives in that picture. So we still haven't got a good answer on that. So, but I think a lot of us that have been asking for Windows Workflow in BizTalk as the orchestration engine, I just think this is going to be the answer. So, yeah, so you could do that very easily because drop it on a queue, worker role picks the queue up, does whatever you want to do with it, sends it back to you. So gives you a lot of flexibility on that. Also some artifact types, different artifact types that you may be able to create. And also some additional functoids and lookup type providers, because at the moment they took the minimum set of those kind of lookups, again, enhancing those. So what we want to talk about now is we'll spend a bit of time on what do we have to do to get high availability, and what do we do if we need to scale out our BizTalk services. So one of the interesting things I found out when I was working with this is that the basic, standard, and premium editions of BizTalk services already have high availability. There are multiple endpoints listening behind the scene. So that was a little bit of a shock that that's already there. As you'll see on the next slide, there you have to do a little bit of translation on their pricing sheet. The other thing we can do is we can actually extend the number of units, and we'll see on the next slide the number of units controls how many bridges you can have and how many things like that. So if we go on to that, so the production use. Now, how many would have looked at production use and said, okay, I can't use developer for production, but I can use the other ones? But actually, their definition of production use means it's highly available. It was a little bit interesting to start with. So all of the additions other than developer have highly available services. So you have multiple nodes running those HTTP endpoints, which is good. With the scale out side of things, standard and premium can scale up. So if you look here, we have in the bridges per unit, for developer you can do 30, for basic you can do 50, for standard is 125, and for premium it's 250. So if you take 250 times 8, so that's 2,000 bridges. There's a little bit of a caveat with that too, is some of the EDI configurations, when you configure an X12 bridge, it actually takes two bridges because of the way the response mechanism works. So, and the only thing that I'm disappointed, or one of the things I'm disappointed, is that price. That's the 50% preview price. So we're talking about $6,000 for the premium edition when it goes out of GA. Yes. There, no, that's the MSDN price, or that's the price either way.
So basically
leaves you with $100. Yes. Yeah, so the good news is I cornered Scott Guthrie between his two talks, and I made a comment about the pricing, and he says we're looking at it. Yeah, so hopefully, and also because I think there's an interesting sweet spot in Australia around that basic and standard for EDI, but the problem is EDI is only available in premium. And I'm sorry, $6,000 a month, I've got to be sending a lot of messages. Huh? Yeah, I know. So a little bit of history behind this from the perspective of why they've done that. The sweet spot they picked for this first release is bigger companies in the U.S. that are using value-added networks. So they're paying these vans large quantities of money to deliver their messages. That's why that price works in the U.S. market. Okay? I explained to them two or three times that nobody in Australia is using value-added networks. They're sending most of their EDI messages directly across the internet with AS2 or just SSL. So hopefully that will result in a little bit of changes in how that's looked at.
It's not very valuable.
Not at the moment. Because I mean, I really think with the number of companies that do EDI in Australia for things like Coles and Woolies and IGA that are that small to medium tier company, this would be a good proposition. Also in that middle tier logistics, not the high end, but the middle tier logistics, they're hopeless at running their own servers. We know by experience. So I really think if they get the pricing right on this, and I'm hoping that it goes just like the rest of Azure. If you've looked at, look at the prices that they started out with, they keep coming down, and you get more value for it. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, so this is another thing that they haven't thought through. What they've done is if you don't have BizTalk on-premise, there is a piece they're shipping with basically standard and premium that allows you to, it uses some of the app fabric stuff to expose endpoints and gives you things like the WCF SQL adapter, Siebel, SAP, PeopleSoft. So what they're doing with that is that if you're using just the stuff that you get for free with those two editions, that's they've got limitations. If you've got BizTalk on-premise, you don't have any limitations. So that's why those numbers are there. It's a little bit strange because it goes back to the fact that they changed the way they sold the line of business adapters in 2010. 2010, the line of business adapters were a separate SKU before that, and you could buy them to use with your .NET code. In 2010, you had to buy a standard edition of BizTalk.
So is that almost like license
mobility? No, it's actually access to the line of business adapters when you buy either one of those two SKUs of BizTalk service. No. This is without BizTalk on-premise. No, I think it's five endpoints.
And is it like the original service bus pricing where it's five concurrent, or is it a total of five deployed services?
I haven't tested it to see whether it's five concurrent or five defined. So, but it is limiting on that point of view, but it's part, I think it's the, if you're going to need more than that, you put BizTalk on premise to do that work. So that, so hopefully watch the pricing and stuff like that. So your next steps, if you want to get started with BizTalk services, is that to look at your existing integration work, look for those pieces that are doing mostly that validation and transformation, because that's going to be the ones that have the really extensive workflows and orchestrations aren't going to be the target. It's going to be the things that are just doing data manipulation, transformations, things like that. Pick one out, try it in BizTalk services. Do a point of a POC with something like that just to see how it works in terms of latency. The picture will change a lot when we get data centers on shore, but I think that's still a little ways away. It's promised, it just hasn't materialized yet. Now, remember your MSDN benefits, okay? Because if you've got, and this is a, this is the only slide the Microsoft guys could give me that had the MSDN benefits on it. So if you've got the professional edition of MSDN, you get $50 worth of Azure per month for free. If you've got the premium edition, so if you're a partner, that's the premium edition there, so you're $100 a month on that. If you have Ultimate, it's $150 a month of free Azure services. And if you've got an existing subscription registered, you do need to go in and tell them to change it to the dollar amount. The original MSDN benefits was so much compute hours, so much storage, and things like that. You want to change it to that dollar amount, and then it doesn't matter what you use it for. It's just up to that dollar amount. And that was the announced at TechEd US, so first part of June. So much better, because the people that were just interested in virtual machines would go off and they'd run out of their compute hours in 2 weeks, and they'd have all this other stuff left. So now you can basically do that. And so that gives you a little bit better. So I'm using, I mean, my demos and everything are done off my Ultimate subscription that the MVP program gives me. So, and I've got 3 days left. I've got 6 days left before it renews, and I've got 3 days worth of money left. So the demo, TechEd sit just right. So there is my contact details. And there's a whole page of resources. So the big ones you want to look at here is you want to look at the MSDN code gallery. Just be a little bit careful. Anything before May, end of May, is going against the older EAI, EDI labs. Anything after May of this year, end of May of this year, is against the new BizTalk services. So, and then you've got the portal, the MSDN documentation, and then the top one is the SDK that you need on your machine to get the components inside of Visual Studio so that you can deploy. The provisioning is a pain in the ass. You need a certificate. Doesn't have to be a public certificate, but it can't be good for more than 5 years. So if you decide like I did and go make it 20-year certificate so you don't have to mess with it, you get a very strange error message. It just won't configure. It doesn't come back and tell you the certificate expires too long. It just comes back and says configuration failed. So be a little careful of that. Then we've got, if you fill in your evaluation form, you can go into the drawing for a sculptured mouse. And I know it's going to be hard to do tonight because you're all going to go out and go to the party as soon as I get done. And then there's the recordings and things will be up on Channel 9. I don't know if people have told you about that. The recordings will be up. If you want more stuff on BizTalk services, there are several sessions from US TechEd that are also on Channel 9 to go. And there's one specifically on EDI if you're interested in that. And there's